Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Alrighty, Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for sharing your Sunday afternoon or your Sunday evening with me. I really do appreciate it. Hey, I got that special guest back on today. Jamal, my son, through popular demand, is back, and we'll be talking about some things together. Welcome to the show, Jamal.
Hey, thank you for having me again.
And no problem. Listen, today we're going to be talking about a number of things, and some of it's based upon some of the emails that I received regarding this situation where this Iranian general got killed. So I am going to be talking about some of that today. So anybody has any comments about it, as always, you can call in at 818-602-4929 is the telephone number for the show. Once again, we always appreciate the call-ins, 818-602-4929. And also, you can also email me at listenup with JP at pottsandassociates.com. That's listenup with JP at pottsandassociates.com. And if you want to get on my blog or my email blast about upcoming show topics, text POTS Associates. That's POTS Associates. And text that to 22828. And then enter your email address. It's just that simple as well. Okay? All right, and I'm also looking for people to jump on my Twitter. So look at the Twitter as well, because I'll be sending tweets out to people, you know, as well about things that are happening out there in the world, comments about those things. That'll be coming up also. So just go to our website, find a Twitter account, and put that on there, and let's go from there. All right, so today we're going to be talking about another topic that Jamal, just give us a little taste about what we're going to be talking about from your perspective today.
We're going to be talking about guns, hip-hop, and YouTube.
Guns, hip-hop, and YouTube. Hey.
And the effect that it has on the inner city, particularly teenage children.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, stay tuned for that one. Before we do that, we're going to get into the emails, of course, and then we'll come to that topic. And, you know, Jamal has to come on to talk about hip-hop because, you know, I'm the old school, so I'm not into the hip-hop. But we'll figure all of that out. So for those of you that are listening, you know, stay tuned for that one. Okay, let's get busy with the first email. Jim, road rage. You have preached it, and now I heard on the news about a 12-year-old boy and a 13-year-old girl that were both shot after throwing snowballs at passing cars. How shameful. Do you know if they caught the guy? Samantha from Milwaukee. Well, Samantha, no, I do not know. I do know that they have put out some requests for information from the general public. And I agree with you. It is shameful. I've always talked about the fact that it's business with road rage. Normally, when we think about road rage, we're actually thinking about two vehicles being involved. Here's the situation. This is one of the reasons why I read this email on here, Samantha, is because this is a different situation. It's a form of road rage, but it's not based on, you know, two vehicles this time. But it is still road rage. So here's some kids. I mean, I grew up in upstate New York. We used to throw snowballs. You know, we didn't really throw them at passing cars. We did throw them at the passing 18-wheelers and hitting the trucks, quite frankly. But here's the situation for those of you who did not hear this. It did happen in Milwaukee. And basically, there were a group of kids that were actually throwing snowballs. It's just different vehicles passing by, just having some fun with it. And this individual in a white Toyota truck stopped and actually shot into the crowd and hit a 12-year-old boy and a 13-year-old girl. So, you know, that's sad, quite frankly. I mean, I have no idea why somebody would do that, Samantha. Don't have any information whether they caught the person or not. It might be tough if they didn't get a, you know, like a video or, you know, it might be tough, you know, or a license plate. The only way that's probably going to turn itself over is somebody knows the person and that person says what they did, and now they end up dropping a dime on them, basically. So, you know, it's another version of road rage. For those of you that are out there driving around, and those of you that have heard me say this in seminars, hey, come on, you know, lose those kind of emotions. All right. Okay, Samantha, hopefully we'll get them. Next email, Jim. I just heard about how New York, due to a new bail reform, that bail and pretrial detentions are being waived for a variety of misdemeanors and felonies. They are going completely nuts up there. Have you heard anything like this before? Aren't they putting people at risk? I'm glad I live in Maryland. Signed by David. Well, David, they are going nuts up there, in my opinion, and I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, there's a lot that's going on right now in terms of things that are going on. You know, I don't know the logic behind some of this, but for those of you who did not hear about that, let me just share some information with you, all right? And that is that they had a new bail reform, and that there's they're telling them that there's no repercussions from committing certain crimes. That's the problem. So these guys are going in and getting out on bail, and I'm going to read you some of the things in a second, but I want you to hear this. This law, and they're making it a retroactive law. Now, that means simply that it does, even though the law itself starts January 1st of 2020, they're making it retroactive for people that were incarcerated before that. That's what we mean by this retroactive business here. And this is Governor Andrew Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio of New York. They want to reduce the number of people held in jails and the amount of time that they're held. Inmates who are in jail and eligible under the new law will just simply have to apply to be freed, and they are going to be let out. Now, do I have a problem with that? Absolutely. You know, when you start circumventing a system like this, in my opinion, I think that's problematic. Jamal, I don't know. What do you think? And these people are being let out. You know what, Jamal, before I do that, let me just tell you something. There's supposed to be like 900 people are expected to be released under this new law. Now, let me just give you an idea before I ask you to comment on some of the areas. Listen to this. According to the district attorney for the state of New York, those accused of the following charges, okay, these won't get out on bail. So like the aggravated assaults, aggravated vehicle assaults, et cetera, manslaughter, unlawful imprisonment in the first degree, criminal possession of a weapon, patronizing a person for prostitution in a school zone, promoting obscene sexual performance by a child. Now, those are reasons they should not get out. So we're not talking about those. All right? I just want to give you a flavor. There is a whole list right here. Resisting arrest, bribery. Those are the things they won't be getting out for. So let's be fair to the other side in terms of what they're trying to do. But just in general, Jamal, sounds like some of these are your petty thefts, things of that nature. No bail. They won't have to post bail to get out. I mean, what do you think?
I think the reform is great. And for people that think that New York is out of their mind, I want, if you can, look up this documentary about Kalief Browder's story. This was a kid who was accused, and I do mean accused, of petty theft. He was leaving a party. He ended up going to jail for over a year and was never convicted. His family never had bail money to get him out. And while he was in there, that place is a zoo. This guy went from being innocent to going to jail and being brutally beaten up by correction officers, other inmates, for over a year, to a point where he got out of jail, finally, because he said, I'm not going to plead guilty, even though they asked him to plead guilty. They asked him to plead guilty and we'll let you out. He said, I'm not pleading guilty to something I didn't do. So because his family did not have bail, he stayed in there for over a year. He went so insane by the time he came home, he couldn't cope with the real world anymore, and he ended up hanging himself and killing himself. Mm. So before you judge about, you know, this bail reform, not everybody is guilty just because you're accused of something. So we have to be careful with that.
Well, Jamal, I don't think that the system is designed, and remember something, they're not saying he was guilty of the crime, all right? And I would look, there's going to be the horror stories out there. The reality is that what we have now is a system of justice, and the system of justice states about the bail, okay, in general, all right? It's unfortunate that that would have happened to somebody like this, but that's one story you're telling me. Tell me five stories like that. Tell me 10 stories like that, 100 stories. The point is that unfortunately, it's not a perfect system, and I get that. But in general, okay, the bail system is put into effect for a reason. Now, let me share something else with you real quick. Now, we're out here in Los Angeles. Now, this person wrote in, David wrote in about this. But, Jamal, did you hear about the California law regarding the grab and dash now? Grab and dash, yeah. Let me just tell you something. This is what's new out here now. So we're talking about this bail situation from New York City. But California now allows grab and dash. These grab and dash theft rings okay, are popping up now because in California they recently passed a law that if you steal $950 in merchandise, okay, you're not going to be charged with a felony anymore. It's just a basic, petty theft type of crime. That it won't be a felony unless it's over $950. So organized shoplifting people are out there now grabbing things. They know that it's less. They had kids going into a store, going into stores and taking things off the shelves as well because it was less than $950 and, you know, and end of story. So if you look at these two situations, bail, no bail, these theft rings, these grab and dash situations, what's your opinion about that?
No, I think that's a little, I think that's going to the other extreme. People who are running into stores grabbing $900 worth of, let's say, clothes or things, jewelry or things like that. No, I think you should be, you know, convicted of a felony for that if you do something to that extent. But let's just say somebody's just running out with food. You know what I mean? Trying to steal food because they're hungry, the kids is hungry and stuff like that. That's a survival thing. So I don't think people like that should be hit with a felony. I don't think they should be included in those groups who are doing it for the thrill of it instead of being hungry. There still should be punishment even if you steal food. I'm not saying that. I don't think the penalty should be as stiff.
Well, here's the deal. The deal is that when these code sections are put in place, though, Jamal, they don't differentiate between food, okay, and clothes, all right? And in terms of, you know, people being hungry, well, you know, right now, as you know, we have the welfare opportunity. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that people can get food, you know, as an example. But, you know, the sad part about this, Jamal, these people are doing the grab and dash, and that's not what they're getting. They're taking other things that they should not be taking. So, it's, you know, look, like I said, the criminal justice system is what it is. And they got one guy that was released, you know, in a bank robbery. Okay, this guy turns around, okay, robs a bank, and he takes less than $900. He gets out, and he turns around. As soon as he gets out, the guy turns around and goes to another bank and steals some more money because he knows what it is, you know? And let's not forget something else. When you start plundering, so to speak, of these businesses, what about the businesses, Jamal, that they're losing their merchandise that they paid for? Okay, they paid for this merchandise. And now they're in a situation where they can't do anything about that. I think that's a little over the top, you know, from their perspective.
Well, let me ask you a question. Is the rules different from first offenders and second offenders?
I don't think it addresses that as an issue. It just simply did this and gave this. Because look at the guy we just talked about with the bank.
Right.
He goes and robs. He gets arrested. He gets out. And he robs another bank. Because why? The repercussions are very low.
Right.
You know, we're talking about misdemeanors. For those of you who don't understand the difference between a misdemeanor and a felony, a misdemeanor is you get less than a year in jail or a $500 fine and or both. A felony, all right, is more than a year in jail and $500 or more as a fine. So just to give you an idea. Okay. So if they're already talking about the fact that, and in California as an example, they're already talking about the fact that the jail system, which is what New York is saying too, in all fairness, is that the jail system is overloaded. So that's why they're rationalizing that, well, you know, we don't want to just put, you know, these regular petty theft offenders in jail because it's overburdening the system. They don't want to pay for it. And that's really the bottom line. So maybe the issue is, why are there so many people in jail? What is going on that's creating that? Maybe that's what they need to look at. But this isn't the right window. By the way, for those of you that are listening, it's Proposition 47 about the $950 in merchandise in California. So if you want to look that up, it's Proposition 47. But I don't know, Jamal. You know, there's always rationale for why people steal. But let's face it. I mean, the way I grew up is that you don't take things that don't belong to you, okay?
Absolutely.
And I do understand what your point about food, people being hungry and things of that nature. But that's not what I'm talking about. These people are doing grab and dash. These are organized theft rings now that are actually going around and doing this.
Right.
And that, to me, you know, is wrong. Now, you look, New York is New York, so I can't, you know, I mean, I grew up in New York. I understand. I get it. But there's a lot of things happening in New York that people are complaining about. So, I don't know. We'll just wait and see.
All
right. At any rate, yeah, they, you know, at some point they might turn that around. Okay, let's get to this third email, because this one is going to be a little controversial. This one has to do with the Iranian general that got killed by a drone attack by the United States. And the person wrote in and said, Jim, all of this hoopla regarding the death of Soleimani, I think his name is pronounced, is ridiculous. The man was and has been classified as a terrorist for years. He has killed Americans. He's killed his own people for years. Good riddance. What are your thoughts? Cheryl, U.S. Army veteran. Cheryl, first of all, I don't disagree with you. There are people out there that are saying this was not the best thing for us to do, and I'm a little bit confused by that. And the reason why I say I'm a little bit confused by the big hoopla personally is that this man was a known terrorist. He's been on the terrorist list for years. And what people may not know is that, look, this guy goes back to his career started budding, so to speak, because when Saddam Hussein was in power. So when Saddam Hussein was in power, he launched an invasion of Iran. Saddam Hussein launched into Iran, this was one of the people that actually got armies together to fight back against this, is the bottom line. And that's how his leadership kind of blossomed, so to speak. He was kind of an unknown at that time. But his role in successful operations to retake lands from Iraq, that's how he got his prominence. That's how it all started. And that's good. I mean, he was fighting for his country. I have no problem with that. But over the years, he grew so powerful that's where the problem became, because of the fact that he was so revered by a lot of people in this country that he blossomed, basically, and he got to the point where he was basically, I would say, is untouchable. But he's been responsible for a lot of attacks. Now, Cheryl, I understand where you're coming from on this. You don't understand the big hoopla about, the situation. It's all, and I don't get into politics, but this is political. I'm not talking about sides, who takes the sides, or whatever the case may be. Now, I will tell you that the interesting thing is that this situation with the United States killing key terrorist individuals is not new. Under the last administration, 45, and that's 4-5, key leaders of terrorist groups were killed. And how were they killed? By drone strikes. My point is that this is not new. And to have all of this that's going on right now, and the impact of this, I don't know. Jamal, what do you think? I'm sure you've seen enough on the news to know about this guy getting killed. There's a lot of hoopla on it. What do you think?
I think America made a promise to turn things around on terrorism. Swift action would always be taken. They made a promise and a commitment to do so, and therefore I think we should honor that commitment. So many lives, innocent lives, have been taken for just needlessly. So if there's one thing that I stand by on, if this person was a terrorist, as they say, then I think the penalty was death, and I think that should have been done. Living in America, we could be very sensitive about certain things that go on in other countries and stuff. It seemed like when we take actions for whatever reason, everybody wants to turn on our own. Sometimes it's war. It's a necessity at times. It's unfortunate, but it is a necessity to protect innocent lives, and I do think we have a duty to do that.
Well, let me just tell you something. There's an ex-CIA operative that actually commented on the death of this individual. And remember, CIA operatives, you guys, these people, the CIA, they operate all over the world, just to be clear, all right? He said, and I'm quoting, "The single most powerful operatives in the Middle East today and the principal military strategist and technician in Iran's effort to combat Western influence and promote the expansion of Shiites and Iranian influences throughout the Middle East." And he said that this guy, okay, Soleimani, was the guy that was pushing this, and that he would use any means possible for his end result. Look, the guy was getting ready to bomb or to do something to the United States Embassy. He had just got through plotting the attack on the United States Embassy. He had other plans in mind. All right, they haven't released everything to us out there about this, but they say that they have the intelligence. The intelligence reports to say he was plotting something else. Look, this is no different. And let me tell you something. Let's go back historically for a second. This business about going after people that have hurt us. Now, this was before my time, but I was an American history major. They had a Japanese admiral, okay? His name was Yamamoto. Yamamoto was the mastermind behind the Pearl Harbor attack. Now, I know that you all learned that in basic high school. Pearl Harbor. Yamamoto was the guy. He was the mastermind behind that. So let me just tell you, way back then, they figured out that he was on a plane heading from point A to point B through their intelligence. What did they do? They sent flyers out there. The Air Force found him and blew him out of the sky. I kid you not. Why? Because of the fact that he was a mastermind. He was the one that plotted and created the situation at Pearl Harbor. So what did we do? We went after him. So this is not new. This is not new. And this is what countries do. Now, look, taking people's lives and all these kind of things, I get it. But that guy was very instrumental. He was a leader, no doubt about it. Now, I will tell you, I've got a list here of even all 445 of these individuals that were taken out during the last administration. And you're talking, I'm going to read some of these to you because I want you to understand the importance of getting rid of these terrorists. We have to be able to do that. They're plotting against us. And look, take the gloves off. These guys have got to understand that if you hurt us, we are coming after you. And what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. So let me just give you an idea as an example. And by the way, Yamamoto, that was in 1943. Once again, nothing new. Hold on, we're getting a call here. Hi, you're on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a comment or a question to share?
Yeah, I was listening to all the hoopla about killing Soleimani and everything else and how people were complaining and actually in some cases blaming Donald Trump for the incident. And I kind of took exception to that.
Okay. And when you say you took exception, I mean, obviously I know what that means. I mean, you weren't happy with the way that he was being blamed for it. What's your opinion about it? You heard what happened. We took him out with a drone strike. And I guess you must have heard what I was just talking about, how we don't, favor these leaders of terrorism.
You know, and I totally agree. And I don't recall Obama getting any criticism for taking out Osama bin Laden or Congress getting a big hoopla about not being asked first on that. And I was just wondering what you thought about that.
Well, look, okay, I try to stay away from the politics of it. That's why I just said the last administration.
Okay.
But during the last administration, all I'm saying is that 45 top people, including Osama bin Laden, who we label as a terrorist, okay, years, okay, they were looking for him, years. So it wasn't just with the last administration. And actually, the actual end result of Osama bin Laden, that whole issue started actually in defense of the last administration, actually started before that, and the administration before him. The end result, yeah, the end result was that they found him in a vulnerable position during that last administration, and they were able to take him out. But, you know, some of these people, so you're asking me whether or not I agree about Congress not saying anything or didn't say anything about Obama. You know, again, I don't get into the politics. I'm just talking both sides of the aisle now. All of these politicians have their own game plans, okay? So whether they complain about these people, who's right, who's wrong, I really don't care. It's what I care about is the fact that in order for our country to be safe, if a drone strike, which has absolutely nothing to do with committing American forces on the ground, where there's a possibility that, you know, the American soldiers can be killed, then a drone strike that can go out there and take some of these people out, end of story. I think they even did that with Gaddafi, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, there's been different key leaders throughout.
Yeah, under Reagan. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that was under Reagan. Okay, yeah. I mean, that goes back some years. But
well, I think his son was taken out under the Reagan administration. I forgot how Gaddafi ended up, but people deserved to be put by the wayside.
Well, since you're on the line, let me just give you an idea of what I'm talking about. Fahid Muhammad Ali Mesalem, one of the perpetrators of the 1998 United States Embassy bombing. He was killed by a drone strike. Why not take him out? Here's another one, the leader of the Taliban, Batula Masood. He was taken out in 2009. Here's another one in 2009, the leader of the Islamic movement. Uzbekistan. Okay? Mm-hmm. No, Baghdadi was taken out, you know, recently, okay? And
right.
This was just another individual. Here's another one, leader of the of the Islamic Jihad Union, 2009. Just listen to the ones in 2009. Here's another guy, Salia al-Somali, senior member. These are senior people. These are leaders of terrorism, and we're taking them out, and there's nothing wrong with that. Now, Saeed bin Laden was bin Laden's son, was taken out, and that was 2009. So, you know, once again, you look at all of these things and say, okay, what's wrong with making sure we're safe and they've got somebody out there plotting against us? I don't care which administration it is, quite frankly. We need to be able to do something about them. And that's what has occurred when they got rid of Baghdadi, and now that's what's happening with this individual. This guy was instrumental in killing about 1,500 of his own people, as I recall. You know, and I'm talking, you know, within the last couple of years or so.
No, he was not a nice man.
He was not a nice man.
But I mean, it also does. I mean, the War Powers Act also does give the president the power to act without consulting Congress, provided that they're notified within 48 hours, isn't that correct?
Well, listen, I actually taught United States constitutional law at the University of Phoenix.
Okay.
And that is an Article 2 power that was given to him under the Constitution. And he has every authority as a commander-in-chief to do what he did. You know, so, you know, look, everybody's got their political agenda for right now in terms of them talking about that he can't do it, couldn't do it, whatever the case may be. But they have a right to do it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, there is another point here. I mean, because people are complaining about, you know, whether he has the right to do it or not to do it and everything else. And I don't know if you could draw a comparison or not, but I remember that, well, not personally, but in history, that, you know, Iran is obviously not a friendly regime to us or to most of the rest of the world. And I don't believe that they really understand much of anything other than force. And I just remember that it was Neville Chamberlain with Hitler that just peace in our time was the quote. And he gave in and he gave in and he gave in. And where the heck did that get us? It certainly didn't make things more safe. And maybe if somebody had stood up to him or taken some action at that time, you know, things would have been a whole lot different in the world.
Well, Chamberlain, again, I was an American history major. So Chamberlain, they were trying to appease Hitler is what happened. And appeasement got them nowhere except World War II after Hitler turned around and took over half of Europe. The United States didn't even get into the war until the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And that was the Japanese anticipating the fact that there were certain areas that they wanted to make sure that they controlled, and they knew that the United States would have an adverse reaction to that, to make a long story short. So they basically decided that they were going to do a preemptive strike so that they could control more of the Pacific than they should have been in control. Let's put it that way. Because after they bombed us and we declared war a few days later, that's when we actually entered the war. And then Germany came in against us at that time as well. So, you know, hey, listen, I appreciate you calling in. We're going to get into this hip-hop, you know, information that Jamal is here about. He's chomping at the bit to get into this piece of it. So we're going to go ahead. But I appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much.
All righty. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's always good to have people that call in to make comments and things of that nature. You know, I mean, I do appreciate it. Anybody else who wants to comment is free to do so. It seemed like he was leaning a little bit more toward one political group, but I don't get into that. I look at it like the realities are, I don't care who's in office. I mean, this was a guy that should have been taken out. I don't like the fact that we're making this big hoopla over all of this, but it is what it is. People have their opinions about it, obviously. So, Jamal, this business about hip-hop, okay? First of all, for our viewers out there, because we have some older viewers out there, and I know they're thinking about, what in the hell is hip-hop?
Well, according to my kids, I'm considered an older person now.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, yeah. That's what ends up happening, you know.
My son's friends call me OG because I got gray hairs now. So, hey, what's up, old?
Then I don't want to meet them. I don't know what the hell they'd be calling me. You want to know the truth. I get enough of that kind of stuff with people talking about what's happening, young man. That automatically tells you you're not young. But at any rate, so it's what I did, though, just for the sake of our viewers and our listeners, let me just give you a definition of hip-hop, because I did look that up, because I was curious.
Sit back.
Yeah. Well, but I'm giving you a textbook definition, so okay. Understand that. It may differ from something you, but it says it was a U.S. pop culture movement that originated in the 1980s, and it was comprised of rap music, graffiti, and breakdancing. So that's what they meant by hip-hop, okay? So that's how this particular thing started. Now, I mean, is that pretty close to what you said?
No, that's fair. Yeah, that's okay. Very fair enough.
All right. And again, it's been around since the 1980s. So, I mean, obviously I was around in the 1980s. I mean, I remember when rap music first started. But, I mean, I was still hung up on Motown. So, you know, this is, you know, right. Something new. It was like, who are these young kids? But at any rate, you know, now, is what I wanted to do, though, Jamal, was be fair about this whole thing, because I know we're going to be talking about videos and things like that. So, is what I looked up was the negative aspects of this.
Exactly. That's the direction I'm going in.
Right. So, let's talk about the negative aspects. Let me just read something to you real quick, okay? And then you can comment. It says, the gangster rap is a hip-hop subgenre that focuses primarily on the negative aspects of inner-city life. The lyrics often glorify criminal activity and degrade women. This genre of hip-hop has been a source of tremendous controversy and is often cited as the cause of the increase in violence within the communities. All right, and they say this is particularly true amongst black youth as they think it's cool to act what is said out in the lyrics.
Yeah.
Okay.
Times have changed quite a bit. And when I say that, when I was growing up, the biggest thing that was controversial was groups like N.W.A. that came out and started talking about violence in hip-hop. But there was still storytelling involved in what their life experiences were. Nowadays, it seemed like it's changed. And the reason why I included YouTube in on this is because these kids now have the power to make their own rap videos. And in these rap videos, it's gone from storytelling to now we got like a bunch of teenagers with guns in the videos, the bigger, the better. And it's showing guns in a negative and irresponsible light. And I think, and there's like been proven statistics that show when these guys are doing that, the younger generation start doing that more and more to make money because they see this. The one thing that excites these children is money and women. And then you add in the guns and drugs also.
Let's talk about the women real quick, because one of the things when I just did this research I told you, they call it sexualism. A topic that has heated up recently is the sexual sensation of women, not only in the lyrics of rap music, but more importantly, the visual representation of women in music videos. The popularity of music videos has reinforced the overt sexuality found in the hip-hop music. Women in these videos are often scantily clothed and use their bodies to get material things.
Absolutely. I think, matter of fact, I think it's gone even worse and deep than that now. I mean, if you look on Instagram, being an Instagram model is a real thing now. Like, you know, and it's like these young women are growing up looking at this like, I can make money just by showing off my body now. These are sending wrong messages to the younger generation. And getting back to some of these videos that are being shown, there was a video, a rap video being filmed in Houston. It was a bunch of gang members. It was at a park. They have guns. They have everything out there. What they didn't show is that it's right by a school. They got kids looking out the windows who were sneaking out of class to go join these music videos. As a result, 20 people were arrested. So my question is, I know YouTube airs them and they're trying to control it. Who's responsible for allowing these images? I know there's, you know, the First Amendment right and things like that.
And that's exactly what I was getting ready to say, Jamal. You know, look, we live in a country that has what they call the United States Constitution.
Right.
Okay, and having the United States Constitution, and I'll tell you something else, they were in a park. Now, if they're in a park is what they call a public forum. All right, so they're able to get to the park and they're able to do these things. Now, the incident that you're talking about, it was in Houston, Texas, as I recall. But I think that the issue was that they also, some of them, had guns. Isn't that correct?
Correct. And that's what I was saying earlier. They had guns and right. videos. And
but some of the people that had the guns were people that were ex-felons.
True.
And because so they were not supposed to be in possession of guns.
True. So how do we control this? Because I know we have a First Amendment right, and that's my question. And artistic expression. All that is great. But at the same time, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater either. To me, this is yelling fire in a crowded theater because the result of it is spiking violence among the youth. And that's where you have to draw the line somewhere. So that's what I was going to ask you. So is there a gray area between First Amendment rights and the Second Amendment?
First of all, they bring these different things up. They have these different ordinances. They have criminal codes. They have all of these things. But that varies from city to city, state to state, et cetera. Okay? Now, if they're in this public forum, Jamal, understand, like you mentioned about this business about you can't yell fire in a movie theater. So under the First Amendment, you can't express yourself on anything that's going to incite violence.
Right.
Okay? So this Houston situation, I'm sure the reason why the Houston police probably showed up might be dependent on the language that they were using at that time and whether or not they were inciting violence. Now, look, if they're there with all of these cameras and they're making these videos and they're doing that, you know, they have an argument that they have a First Amendment protection because they are expressing themselves.
Right.
It's artistic. It's music. We're sending a message to the community. Where they got in trouble is that they actually had guns.
Right.
Now, is what they could have done is use some common sense and then had fake guns. I mean, there's guns out there that are fake that look real.
Right.
Okay, and now here's a guy that's on parole or a guy that's an ex-felon that's not supposed to have a weapon on him. And now all of a sudden here he's got this weapon. So why aren't they using common sense is the way I look at it.
Right. So what do you think what can be done to change the negative imagery of guns in these videos and stuff like that? Because it's gone to the extreme. There was a time where people became rappers to get out of a lifestyle. Now these young kids are becoming rappers to get into this gang culture. And as a result, there's been like wars. Like literally in Chicago, you had a series of rappers, number of rappers who were doing rap videos and then killing each other. Well, these rap videos.
Well, what you're bringing up right now, I tell you, one of the sections that I have here is called egotistical. There are a number of rappers that are quite egotistical, and many rap songs can basically be boiled down to, I'm the best, toughest, and the hardest. Don't disagree with me, or I'll show you otherwise, okay?
Right.
And that goes along the lines of what you're talking about now.
Right.
So some of this has to also do with their egos.
Right.
And some of these guys, let's face it, some of these guys are gang-affiliated.
Right.
They end up getting themselves into situations.
Right.
And now something happens to them, and now you got reprisals.
Right.
You know, that's just the way it is. But you're mentioning about violence. Let's not forget something else, though. Let's not forget the promotion of drug use.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, because, you know, I'll comment on this, is that the promotion of drug use is consistently found through rap verses and often glorified. Rappers fail to show the negatives and the consequences of using or doing them. So, look, to me, I understand the way that they started out, and some of those rappers have made a lot of money, you know, by doing this.
Right. So how can we? So this is what I need to know and ask people: like, what can we do to start controlling this? Because we have to do something. Because the statistics show, whenever rappers start bringing up a drug, it spikes among children. Like when they talk about mollies. Lean, and some of these rappers are dying from this stuff. You know, there used to be a time when, you know, They changed cigarette advertisements so kids can't see it because it's appealing to kids.
So they changed cigarettes advertisements, okay?
Alcohol.
Because they changed alcohol advertisements, etc. But look, you got to understand that this is something that's more artistic, okay, is part of the problem. But you want to know where this needs to start? I hate to say it. In the home. Because people instilling principles in their children, keeping some of these kids away from these videos, making sure they're not buying these videos, it's what I've talked about on the show before. Parents have got to know what their kids are doing. They got parents out there going out there and buying these videos for these kids.
But these are not videos. These are on YouTube.
Oh, YouTube. So okay,
anybody,
that's right.
So anybody can see this on YouTube. It's not hard to do to see, you know what I mean? We can't even protect our own kids.
But see, here we go. Now technology has seriously impacted some of this. And that's a problem because how do you control the internet anymore?
Right.
Okay, these kids have access through their cell phones. These kids have access to their laptops. They're using laptops in schools.
Right.
So it's not like you could deprive the kids of it. So once again, to me, it goes back towards how do you raise your children to try to stay away from some of these things and the mindsets of some of this. You're going to have to do it.
But that's the perfect world. That's in the perfect world. In reality, a lot of these kids come from broken homes or not even just necessarily broken homes where the parents got to work later hours. So there's that in-between time between school and their parents coming home from work.
I got to tell you, I'm smiling. I got to tell you, I'm smiling real quick. Let me tell you why I'm smiling, Jamal. I don't even know if I've ever shared this with you in your lifetime. But look, as you know, my brothers and I grew up in Brooklyn.
Right. All right?
Now, my mother was an executive for the phone company, and my father drove 18-wheelers, which means my father was gone on the road and was not always home. Okay?
Right.
My mother would work late, okay? So her father, my grandfather, is the one that would watch us. You know, we'd come home from school. He'd fix us dinner. We would be out in the street some nights when my mother got home at 8, and she was executive for a phone company. She'd get home 8, 9 o'clock at night.
Right.
And we'd be outside on the street.
Right.
Okay? Now, it was Brooklyn.
So you wasn't doing your homework?
Oh, the homework was already done.
Oh, okay.
All right? But wait a minute. Understand how old I was.
Right.
We're talking age probably from 5.
Oh, wow.
And then when we moved up to upstate New York, let's see, that would have been, okay, I was 11 years old. So I'm talking in between the age of 5 and 11.
Right.
When we moved up to state New York, I was in third grade. So what I'm talking about is being out there in first and second grade.
Right.
Okay, I had two older brothers. They were a year older than me. Okay. Right. One was 2 years older, one was a year older, and then it was me.
Right.
Okay, at that time. So you're talking about the fact that we were out in the street that time. But again, this is Brooklyn. You stay on your own block. You know, that's just the way New York City is.
Right.
So we just stayed on the block playing with other people, you know, the other kids, you know, on the street and everything. But once again, the same issues. They had gangs, you know, that used to try to invade your block and used to run inside, go inside, things of that nature. So the gang issue is not a new issue at all.
Right.
You know. So, at any rate, understand, all right, that this issue about parents not always being there,
right,
but yet they still, when they were there, still instilled certain things in us.
Values.
So that's what it has to, certain values in us, and that's what, you know, so, again, you ask me, how do we get a solution to this? You got to start by the education with parents and working with their children. I don't care if there's one parent in the house. They got to do the best they can to work with it. It's just that simple.
Absolutely.
Now, in all fairness, you know, because I always like to give both sides of the ticket when I'm out here talking about these things. So there are some positives.
Right.
Because I wanted to know also, you know, again, to be fair, the positive pieces to rap music.
Right.
So I looked that up. So, and I'll read this to you, okay? It says, rap music has long had a reputation of being a form of music that represents violence, sexual exploitation, as well as is celebrating street warfare and gangs, consumption of drugs and alcohol, sex and negative attitudes toward women. Okay. But they also say, and I'm going to flip here a little bit, but they also say here's some of the positives. All right. Now, the positives were unification and education. One of the positive effects is that it has been used as a great unifier of diverse populations even around the world, not just here. Okay, and it started out as a subculture among African-American communities in America, but it's now a phenomenon of global culture.
Right.
So they're saying that this actually, there's a unification here, there's education here, And one of the things it says is hip hop has been vital in promoting social and political awareness among the youth today as well.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Well, I
know we don't normally look at it that way, but
It has united people. But I think at some point we have to bring it together. Maybe it's the older rappers, or you know what I mean. We got to start fixing this problem, because there's a lot of positive rappers out there, which does a lot of good work and good things out there, and some of them are telling stories of their lives. But what we got to do is start fixing this, to where the negative imagery and guns in our community is a necessity for us to fix. And I'm not blaming it, because my generation of rappers, they started this, but they were storytelling.
Jamal, I don't mean offense, but half the rappers that you knew they're popular, half of them are dead now, aren't they?
Come on, man.
Your boy Tupac, Biggie Spot. All these different, some of these guys, didn't some of these guys get eliminated with each other?
Yeah, but so did the bus driver down the street. You know what I mean? No matter what business you're in, people are going to, unfortunately get killed.
Yeah, Jamal, but come on. We heard on the news about some of these guys, man. I don't think they ever found out who killed Tupac, did they?
No, they did. Well, that's a whole other story.
Although you used to tell me Tupac wasn't really dead. He was coming back.
That's a story you wanted to stick with. I used to always say that this was the rumor, that this was the story that the people were trying to say. And somehow or another, you stuck it to me as being the front runner and the leader telling everybody he's still alive.
At the time, Jamal, it was interesting to say it. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So, yeah, there are some rappers that that have been murdered, unfortunately, and stuff like that. Even at that, it's time to start fixing and healing the community. And we got to start figuring out how to eliminate these guns out of the kids' hands instead of promoting it. And that's where the problem, I feel like these rappers are promoting it
More and more. But that's an issue. This issue about gun control and people getting guns is on a national basis right there. Every time there's a shooting, a school shooting, what do they start talking about? Gun control, gun control, gun control. The reality is that, come on, in the inner city, Jamal, how tough is it for somebody to get a gun?
It's not hard at all.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. Now, I know that L.A., as one example, had to, buy the gun back program and blah, 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 blah. And people were turning in these older guns, getting the new money.
The ones that didn't work anymore
and then buying new guns. Right. Now, they also talked about the fact that one of the other positives I want to mention is that they say, I told you unification and education, but hope. Many rappers, rap about poverty and their struggles in the inner city America while growing up. Once they achieve success, they talk about overcoming obstacles and rising to the top. So this is a positive message of hope for the youth. Now, who was that rapper that was killed, last year, that was actually doing that, trying to do things for the community?
Nipsey Hussle.
Right, Nipsey Hussle, that's right. And then he ended up getting killed because of some conflict with somebody that he knew.
Right, that was a very big loss to our community, because he was promoting a lot of positivity in our neighborhood and trying to give back. A lot of these rappers are supposed to do, but he was actually doing it. People say they're going to do stuff, he was actually living it. And that was a tough loss to our community.
Yeah, but those things are going to happen, unfortunately. When I mentioned earlier about rappers and some of the rappers getting killed, some of them have been very positive and not necessarily doing the wrong things. There's an example of one that was doing it the right way and unfortunately, met death, so to speak, because of somebody that had a disagreement with them.
Right. I know this would be for another show at another day, but I would like to find out where all these illegal guns coming from and how they get into our inner cities.
Mm-hmm. It's called gun stores.
No. I don't think Turner's is selling.
Well, we know what's going on, Jamal. They're getting these guns, Jamal, because they can burglarize homes. The guns get out there in the streets and people buy them. We're never going to be able to stop that. Right. But the last positive that I want to mention, Jamal, is this business about social awareness. Because what they are saying is that through education and understanding, rap music has actually spurred social awareness in the communities around the country. Absolutely. So that's another positive. And some of them, according to this, says that they do speak out about the negative aspects of life, such as violence and guns. and some of the artists use their musical talents to promote peace and anti-violent acts. So I do. I want to be fair about that, too.
No, absolutely. And I'm not trying to beat up on hip-hop because I love hip-hop. I love the music and all that kind of stuff. But we do have a responsibility.
Well, it's true. All right. Look, this was a very entertaining show, Jamal. As always, I appreciate you coming on here.
Thanks for having me.
It's not a problem. And did you write my producer a check for you being here again this time? Oh, no, that's right.
I thought I was picking a check up. No?
All right, you've been listening. Let me get off the air with that one. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio, and actually Jamal Potts also. So it's time to close out the show. Be sure to join me next week. And do me a favor, if you like what you heard, spread the word. All right? Until then, I want you to be aware, I want you to be vigilant, and I want you to be safe. But more importantly, be a reluctant victim. Wait a second. You saw me push that.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.